A ghost stalks the ramparts of Elsinore Castle in full battle armor, appearing to terrified guards on successive nights. The apparition wears the face of Denmark's recently deceased king, and its silent presence feels like an omen. Something is profoundly wrong in the kingdom. When Prince Hamlet learns of these sightings from his trusted friend Horatio, he joins the Night Watch, desperate to understand why his father's spirit cannot find peace. The encounter that follows transforms grief into purpose. The ghost reveals that King Hamlet was murdered by his own brother Claudius, who poured poison into his ear while he slept. "The serpent that did sting thy father's life now wears his crown," the spirit declares, commanding Hamlet to avenge this crime, but spare his mother from harm. This supernatural visitation burdens the young prince with an impossible moral dilemma. How can he fulfill this sacred obligation without corrupting his own soul? The ghost's final plea, "Remember me," becomes both blessing and curse, echoing throughout the play as Hamlet swears to adopt an antic disposition, feigned madness, to mask his true intentions while investigating his uncle's ilk. Elsinore Castle is a claustrophobic world where appearances mask reality. Claudius, the smiling villain who seized his brother's throne and wife, surrounds himself with spies, recruiting Hamlet's school friends Rosencrantz and Guildenstern to monitor the prince. More complex is Polonius, who dispenses wise advice, "to thine own self be true," while simultaneously arranging to spy on his own son in Paris. This surveillance culture extends when Polonius uses his daughter Ophelia as bait, instructing her to return Hamlet's love letters while he and Claudius hide to observe. Language itself becomes weaponized. Hamlet's wordplay serves as both shield and sword, allowing him to speak truths under the guise of madness. When Polonius asks what he reads, Hamlet replies, "Words, words, words," mocking the counselor's empty rhetoric. In this atmosphere of constant observation and deception, genuine human connection becomes nearly impossible, making Elsinore a microcosm for political corruption where power operates through manipulation and truth is the first casualty. Hamlet's consciousness, his ability to question not just circumstances, but existence itself, makes him startlingly modern. His soliloquies reveal a mind wrestling with grief, moral duty, and life's purpose. His first, "Oh, that this too solid flesh would melt," exposes disillusionment at his mother's remarriage while contemplating suicide. The celebrated "to be or not to be" transcends his situation to address universal human fears. Life means enduring the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, while death offers uncertain rest. After watching an actor weep for fictional Hecuba, Hamlet castigates himself for inaction, the contrast filling him with self-loathing. Most revealing, finding Claudius at prayer, he hesitates, reasoning that killing him during devotion might send his soul to heaven. This moral calculation demonstrates how Hamlet's intellectual nature both elevates and hampers him, his consciousness making him literature's most human character while preventing him from fulfilling the ghost's simple command. The play's the thing wherein I'll catch the conscience of the king. Hamlet enlists a theater troupe to stage the murder of Gonzago, modified to mirror his father's alleged murder. He instructs the actors to hold the mirror up to nature, revealing his belief that good acting uses artifice to expose reality. During the mousetrap, three performances unfold simultaneously: the players enacting murder, Hamlet playing madman commentator, and Claudius struggling to maintain composure. When the fictional king is poisoned through his ear, Claudius abruptly calls for lights, confirming his guilt. This theatrical device demonstrates how art can expose truths that direct confrontation cannot. The play within a play creates a dizzying hall of mirrors where representation and reality blur. When Hamlet tells Ophelia, "I loved you not," is he performing or speaking truth? This meta-theatrical element transforms the play into a meditation on performance itself, suggesting art's highest purpose might be provoking moral awakening, catching the conscience not just of fictional kings, but of all who witness it. In Elsinore's patriarchal world, women possess minimal autonomy. Gertrude's hasty remarriage drives Hamlet's distress, yet Shakespeare presents her ambiguously. The closet scene reveals moral awakening when Hamlet forces comparison between his father and uncle. Her cry that he has cleft my heart in twain suggests genuine remorse. Ophelia's tragedy stems from complete subordination to male authority. Polonius forbids her from seeing Hamlet and uses her as bait. When she dutifully returns his love tokens, she faces Hamlet's rage, "Get thee to a nunnery." Caught between filial obedience and romantic attachment, she has no language for her own desires. After Polonius's death, she descends into madness, her fragmented songs about death and lost maidenhood revealing wounds too deep for reason. Ophelia's drowning epitomizes her passive fate. Gertrude's poetic description transforms death into beautiful imagery, obscuring its horror. Even in death, she remains an object of male contention, with church authorities debating her burial and Laertes and Hamlet competing for ownership of grief. These constrained lives reflect the play's broader critique of patriarchal structures that reduce women to pawns. Alas, poor Yorick. I knew him, Horatio. After four acts of philosophical contemplation, Shakespeare confronts Hamlet with death's physical reality through Yorick's skull, the court jester who once carried him on his back. Gravediggers casually debate whether Ophelia deserves Christian burial, their gallows humor contrasting sharply with Hamlet's intellectual anguish. Holding Yorick's skull, Hamlet remembers the living man, a fellow of infinite jest, before confronting grotesque transformation. Here hung those lips that I have kissed I know not how oft. This juxtaposition makes death visceral, no longer abstract. When Ophelia's funeral procession arrives and Laertes leaps into her grave, Hamlet's emotional outburst triggers their struggle in death's domain, a macabre competition over who loved her more. Having confronted mortality directly, Hamlet achieves new perspective. When Horatio warns about the fencing match, Hamlet responds with new fatalism. There is special providence in the fall of a sparrow. The readiness is all. This acceptance represents his final maturation, no longer paralyzed by thought, but moving toward destiny with tragic awareness. The final scene unfolds with tragic inevitability. Within minutes, the entire Danish court lies poisoned. Hamlet apologizes to Laertes, attributing his offense to madness. During the duel, Hamlet scores two hits, prompting Claudius to offer poisoned wine, but Gertrude drinks instead. Laertes wounds Hamlet with the poisoned sword, but loses it in a scuffle, allowing Hamlet to wound him with the same weapon. As both men realize they're dying, Laertes confesses the conspiracy and identifies Claudius as its architect. Hamlet's long-delayed revenge finally occurs almost as an afterthought. He stabs Claudius with the poisoned sword and forces him to drink the remaining poison. The moment lacks expected catharsis, emphasizing revenge's futility when everyone involved is already dying. In his final moments, Hamlet begs Horatio to live and tell my story. Shakespeare offers no simple answers, presenting instead the complexity of achieving justice in a corrupt world. Revenge creates its own cycle of destruction, consuming the innocent alongside the guilty. Hamlet's tragedy reminds us that justice achieved through bloodshed leaves only broken hearts and empty thrones.